Hello, and welcome to Mr. Doom, and welcome to another episode of Scary Stories. My name is Aaron, and I've been an avid camper most of my life. There's something about being out in the wilderness, away from the chaos of the world, that clears my head. Or at least, that used to be the case. Last fall, something happened that made me reconsider camping alone, maybe for good. It was early November, the time of year when the woods are cold but not unbearable. I'd taken a few days off work to camp in a remote area of the Allegheny National Forest in Pennsylvania. I'd been to the forest before, but this time, I wanted to try a spot farther off the beaten path. After parking my car at a small gravel lot, I hiked about 5 miles into the woods. By late afternoon, I found a clearing near a creek that seemed perfect, secluded, quiet, and surrounded by tall pines. I set up my tent, gathered some firewood, and settled in for the evening. The first couple of hours were uneventful. I cooked dinner over the fire, leaned back in my chair, and let the sounds of the forest wash over me. By 9 p.m., the temperature had dropped sharply, and the darkness around me felt heavier than usual. It wasn't eerie, exactly, just quiet. I decided to take a short walk before calling it a night. I grabbed my flashlight and followed a faint trail that wound through the trees. The beam of light cut through the darkness, revealing nothing but the occasional rock or fallen branch. But about 50 yards from my campsite, the light caught something unusual. There were markings on the ground. At first, I thought they were just scuffs or scratches from animals. But as I got closer, I realized they were deliberate. Symbols, crudely drawn in the dirt, spiraled in strange, chaotic patterns. Some looked like runes, while others were unfamiliar shapes that made no sense to me. I knelt down to get a better look and noticed something else. Small, charred fragments scattered around the markings. Bones. They looked like they'd been burned, the edges blackened and brittle. A chill ran through me. I told myself it was probably the remains of an old campfire, maybe some kids messing around. But deep down, I knew something felt off. I turned back toward my campsite, suddenly hyper-aware of how isolated I was. The woods felt different now, like they were holding their breath. When I got back to my tent, I stoked the fire and tried to shake off the unease. I told myself I was overthinking it, but then, just as I was starting to relax, I heard it. Voices, faint at first, almost like the wind, but unmistakably human. They were coming from the direction of the trail I'd just been on. I froze, straining to make out the words, but they were too far away. There was a rhythmic quality to the sound, like chanting. I doused the fire immediately, plunging my campsite into darkness. My heart was pounding as I grabbed my flashlight and switched it off, not wanting to draw attention. The voices grew louder. Whoever they were getting closer. I crouched behind a fallen log near my tent, trying to stay out of sight. That's when I saw the lights. Dim, flickering orbs of orange moving through the trees. Torches. There were at least 6 or 7 of them, carried by figures in dark clothing. They moved in a slow, deliberate line, their chanting low and guttural. I couldn't make out their faces, but their movements were precise, almost rehearsed. They stopped about 30 yards from my campsite, right where I'd seen the markings on the ground. One of them, a tall figure with something draped over their shoulders, animal fur maybe, stepped into the center of the group and raised their arms. The chanting stopped. The silence that followed was suffocating. I pressed myself flat against the ground, barely breathing, as the tall figure began to speak. His voice was deep and commanding, but the words were in a language I didn't recognize. He gestured toward the symbols on the ground, and the others began to move around him, forming a circle. What happened next still haunts me. One of the figures stepped forward, carrying what looked like a bundle wrapped in cloth. They placed it in the center of the circle, and the chanting resumed, louder, more frenzied. Then they set it on fire. The flames roared to life, illuminating their faces for the first time. They wore masks, grotesque, animal-like masks with twisted horns and snarling mouths. I must have shifted slightly because a branch under me cracked. The chanting stopped. Every head turned in my direction. For a moment, I thought my heart had stopped too. The tall figure barked something, and 2 of the torchbearers started moving toward me. Their torches cast long shadows through the trees, and I could hear their footsteps crunching on the leaves. I slipped my pack over my shoulder and crawled as silently as I could toward the opposite side of the clearing. When I felt like I had enough distance, I bolted. I didn't care about the noise anymore. I just ran. My legs burned, and my lungs felt like they were going to explode. But I didn't stop until I reached the gravel lot where my truck was parked. I scrambled inside, locked the doors, and started the engine. As the headlights lit up the trailhead, I saw movement in the trees, dark figures watching me from the shadows. I didn't stick around to see what they'd do next. I drove straight to the nearest town and spent the rest of the night in a diner, sipping bad coffee and trying to convince myself it was all a bad dream. The next morning, I reported what I'd seen to the local authorities. They sent a couple of rangers to check the area, but they didn't find anything. No markings, no fire, no signs of the group. I know what I saw, and I know I was lucky to get out of there alive. My name is Emily, and this happened 3 summers ago when I was 25. My best friend Sarah and I had decided to go on a weekend camping trip to celebrate her birthday. We'd been talking about doing something adventurous for months, and with the weather being perfect in late July, it seemed like the ideal time to finally go. We picked a spot in a state park about 2 hours from our town. It was secluded enough to feel like we were escaping the city, but still close enough to get help if we needed it. Or so we thought. We arrived late Saturday afternoon, parked the car, and hiked about 2 miles into the woods to find the perfect campsite. The spot we chose was beautiful, nestled between tall pines with a small clearing where we could set up the tent and a fire pit already built by previous campers. By the time we pitched the tent and got a fire going, the sun was setting, painting the sky in shades of orange and pink. We sat by the fire, eating s'mores and laughing about how we were roughing it with our overpacked bags full of snacks and gadgets. Everything felt perfect. But as the night fell, the woods around us grew darker and quieter. The sounds of birds and rustling leaves were replaced by a thick silence, broken only by the occasional crack of a twig. Around 10 p.m., we were sitting by the fire when Sarah suddenly froze. "Did you hear that?" she whispered. I stopped mid-laugh and listened. At first, I didn't hear anything, but then there it was, a faint sound like footsteps coming from somewhere behind us. "It's probably just an animal," I said, trying to convince both of us. Sarah nodded, but she looked uneasy. We went back to chatting, but the mood had shifted. Every time the fire crackled or the wind rustled the trees, we jumped. About an hour later, we decided to call it a night. We put out the fire, zipped ourselves into the tent, and settled into our sleeping bags. That's when it started. At first, it was faint. What sounded like someone walking around the campsite. The crunch of leaves and snapping twigs grew louder, circling the tent. "Do you hear that?" Sarah whispered, her voice trembling. I nodded, heart pounding. "Probably just a deer," I said. But I didn't believe it. The footsteps stopped right outside the tent. We both held our breath, frozen in place. Then came the sound of something, or someone, dragging across the nylon fabric of the tent. Sarah grabbed my arm, squeezing so hard it hurt. "What do we do?" she mouthed. I didn't have an answer. My mind was racing. Should we yell, run, stay silent? Before I could decide, the sound moved to the back of the tent. And then, nothing. The footsteps were gone. We waited for what felt like hours, clutching each other in the dark, straining to hear anything outside. But the woods were completely silent again. Eventually, exhaustion took over, and we drifted into a restless sleep. Around 3 a.m., I woke up to the sound of Sarah whispering my name. "Emily," she said, her voice shaking. "There's someone outside." I opened my eyes. My heart immediately racing again. "Are you sure?" I whispered back. She nodded, pointing to the faint shadow of a figure on the side of the tent, illuminated by the moonlight. I felt my stomach drop. Whoever it was, they were standing perfectly still, just feet away from us. My hands fumbled for my phone, and I realized with a sinking feeling that I had no service. "We need to get to the car," Sarah whispered. "How?" I mouthed back, knowing we'd have to unzip the tent to get out, and whoever was out there would hear us. We sat there, paralyzed, as the figure finally moved, walking slowly around the tent. Then we heard the unmistakable sound of something being dragged, a heavy scraping noise that made my skin crawl. "What is that?" Sarah whispered, tears streaming down her face. "I don't know," I said, trying to keep my voice steady. The dragging sound stopped, and then everything went quiet again. After a few minutes that felt like hours, I decided we couldn't just sit there. I grabbed the small camping knife I'd packed, though it felt laughably inadequate, and motioned for Sarah to follow me. "We're going to run," I whispered. "Straight to the car. Don't look back." She nodded, clutching her flashlight. I unzipped the tent as quietly as I could, praying the sound wouldn't give us away. The clearing was empty, but the fire pit looked different, like someone had scattered the rocks around. We bolted. I've never run so fast in my life, and I don't think Sarah had either. The path was barely visible in the moonlight, but we didn't stop. About halfway to the car, we heard it again. Footsteps, this time running after us. "Don't stop!" I shouted, adrenaline taking over. We burst out of the woods and into the parking area, fumbling with the keys to unlock the car. Sarah jumped into the passenger seat while I scrambled into the driver's side. As I started the car, the headlights lit up the trailhead, and for a split second, I saw him. A man, standing at the edge of the woods, holding something long and sharp. I slammed on the gas, speeding out of the lot and down the empty road. We didn't stop until we reached a gas station about 20 miles away. Shaking, we called the police and told them what happened. They said they'd send someone to check the campsite, but I never heard back from them. To this day, I have no idea who that man was or what he wanted. But I'll never forget the way he stood there, just watching us as we drove away. Sarah and I haven't been camping since. And honestly, I don't think we ever will again. My name's Ethan, and this happened about a year ago. I'm 29 now, and camping has always been my way of getting some space to clear my head. I love the peace, the solitude, and the disconnect from the chaos of everyday life. But after what happened that night, I haven't camped alone since. It was late October, and I'd taken a couple of days off work to head into the forest near Blue Ridge, Georgia. I'd been to the area a few times before, but this trip was a little more remote than usual. I wanted to really get away, so I picked a spot about 3 miles off the main trail. I got there in the early afternoon, parked my car at a designated area just off the dirt road, and hiked to a clearing surrounded by tall pines. It was perfect, quiet, secluded, and far enough away from anyone else that I wouldn't be bothered. By sunset, I had my tent set up, a fire crackling, and a small pot of chili warming over the flames. I ate, leaned back in my camping chair, and let the forest sounds wash over me. The occasional hoot of an owl, the rustling of leaves. It was the kind of quiet that felt alive. Around 9 p.m., the air started to get chilly, so I added another log to the fire and grabbed my flashlight to walk the perimeter of my campsite. It's something I always do, just to make sure there aren't any animals lurking nearby. Everything seemed normal, until I glanced toward the direction of my car. Through the trees, about 100 yards away, I could just barely see the faint outline of my car parked in the clearing. For a second, I thought I saw a light flash from it, but when I focused, everything looked dark again. I shook it off, thinking it must have been my imagination or the moonlight catching on the windshield. Still, it left me with a weird feeling, like I wasn't as alone as I thought. I went back to my fire, poked at it for a while, and eventually crawled into my tent. I zipped myself into my sleeping bag and tried to relax, but that uneasy feeling lingered. Around midnight, I was jolted awake by a sound, 3 sharp beeps, like a car being locked or unlocked. My heart dropped. It came from the direction of my car. I sat up, my breathing shallow, and listened. The forest was dead silent now. No wind, no animals, just the faint ringing in my ears from how quiet it was. I grabbed my flashlight and knife, unzipped the tent, and stepped out into the cold night. The fire had died down to glowing embers, casting just enough light to see the immediate area. Then I saw it. A quick flash of light, like the headlights on my car flicking on for a split second before going dark again. Someone was at my car. Every instinct screamed at me to stay put, but curiosity, or stupidity, got the better of me. I moved slowly toward the tree line, keeping low, my flashlight off to avoid giving away my position. As I got closer, I could see the car more clearly. The driver's side door was closed, and the interior was dark. Everything looked normal. Then I saw it. A face, pale and motionless, staring out from the driver's seat. I froze, my breath catching in my throat. At first, I thought it might be a reflection, but the longer I stared, the more I realized it wasn't. There was someone inside my car. The face didn't move, didn't blink. It just stared straight ahead, as if waiting for something. I backed up slowly, careful not to make a sound, but the crack of a twig under my boot gave me away. The face turned. It didn't look at me. It looked through me, like I wasn't even there. Panic took over. I turned and sprinted back to my campsite, my flashlight bouncing wildly as I ran. I didn't stop until I was back by the fire, breathing hard, clutching the knife like it would actually do something against whatever that was. I crouched by the fire, my eyes darting between the tent and the trees, half expecting to see that face emerge from the darkness, but nothing happened. After what felt like hours, I convinced myself to take another look at the car. Maybe it was my imagination, or a trick of the light. Maybe the stress of being out here alone was getting to me. I inched back toward the tree line, my flashlight off, keeping as quiet as I could. When I got close enough to see the car again, my blood ran cold. The driver's side door was wide open. I didn't even think. I turned and ran back to my campsite, grabbed my pack and my keys, and bolted for the trail. I didn't care about the tent or the fire. I just needed to get out of there. The hike back to the car felt like a nightmare. Every shadow, every sound made my heart race. When I finally reached the clearing, the car looked empty. The door was still open, but there was no sign of anyone or anything. I climbed in, locked the doors, and started the engine. As the headlights lit up the clearing, I caught one last glimpse of something moving in the trees, a flash of pale skin and dark eyes watching me before disappearing into the shadows. I didn't stick around to find out what it was. I drove straight to the nearest gas station and spent the rest of the night in the parking lot, my doors locked and my knife in my lap. To this day, I have no idea who or what that face belonged to. All I know is that I'll never camp alone again. And every time I get into my car, I check the back seat first, just in case. My name's Ryan, and this happened 2 summers ago. I've always been into solo hiking. There's something about being out in the middle of nowhere with just your gear and the wilderness that clears your mind. It was late July, and I'd planned a weekend hike through a remote trail in the Pacific Northwest. The trail wasn't well known, which is exactly why I chose it. No crowds, no distractions, just peace and quiet. The first day was everything I hoped for. The weather was perfect. The trail was challenging, but not impossible. And the scenery was stunning. Dense trees, clear streams, and occasional glimpses of the mountains in the distance. I didn't see another soul the entire day, which suited me just fine. By early evening, I found a good spot to set up camp, a small clearing near a creek. It was perfect. Flat ground for my tent, water for cooking and cleaning, and plenty of firewood nearby. I pitched my tent, collected some firewood, and got a small fire going to cook dinner. As the sun set, the forest grew darker, and the sounds of nature grew louder. I sat by the fire, eating instant noodles and watching the flames dance. It was peaceful, exactly what I needed. After finishing dinner, I put out the fire, climbed into my tent, and fell asleep almost immediately. I woke up sometime in the middle of the night. At first, I wasn't sure why. The forest was quiet, except for the faint rustling of leaves in the breeze. But then I noticed the glow, the faint, flickering light of a fire. Confused, I unzipped my tent just enough to peek out. My stomach dropped. The fire I'd put out was burning again, and a man was sitting next to it. He was facing the flames, his back to me. He wore a dark jacket and a baseball cap, and he was hunched forward, staring into the fire like he was lost in thought. I froze, my mind racing. Who was he? Where had he come from? I hadn't seen anyone on the trail all day, and it was the middle of the night. How had he even found my campsite? I thought about staying silent, but I couldn't just sit there and do nothing. Hello? I called out, my voice shaky. The man didn't move. Hey, I said a little louder this time. Can I help you? Slowly, he turned to look at me. His face was partially hidden by the shadow of his cap, but I could see enough to know he wasn't smiling. Sorry, he said, his voice low and gravelly. Didn't mean to scare you. I got lost. Saw your fire pit and thought I'd stop for a bit. I didn't know what to say. Something about him felt off. He wasn't carrying any gear. No backpack, no water bottle, nothing. Just him and the clothes on his back. You're lost? I asked. Yeah, he said, turning back to the fire. Been wandering for hours. Thought I was on the right trail, but I guess not. I climbed out of my tent, keeping a safe distance. Where were you headed? Nowhere in particular, he said with a shrug. Just hiking. His answers didn't make sense. If he was just hiking, why didn't he have any gear? And how had he ended up in such a remote spot without a map or supplies? You put the fire out? He asked, gesturing to the flames. Yeah, I said. I did. He nodded slowly, as if that meant something to him. The silence stretched on, the only sound the crackling of the fire. My heart was pounding, and I felt a growing sense of unease. You can stay here tonight if you need to, I said cautiously, but we should probably figure out where you went off trail in the morning. The man didn't respond right away. He just stared into the fire, his expression unreadable. Finally, he said, You ever feel like someone's watching you out here? The question caught me off guard. What do you mean? I mean, he said slowly, you ever feel like the forest has eyes? Like you're never really alone? I didn't know how to respond. Before I could say anything, he stood up. He was taller than I'd realized, his frame casting a long shadow in the firelight. I should get going, he said, his voice almost a whisper. Are you sure? I asked, though I was relieved at the thought of him leaving. Yeah, he said. Thanks for the fire. And just like that, he walked off into the darkness, disappearing into the trees without so much as a flashlight to guide him. I stood there for a long time, staring at the spot where he'd disappeared. Part of me wanted to follow him, to make sure he was okay, but my instincts told me to stay put. Eventually, I put the fire out again, climbed back into my tent, and locked the zipper. I didn't sleep the rest of the night. Every rustle, every snap of a twig outside, made my heart race. When dawn finally broke, I packed up my camp as quickly as I could, eager to leave the strange encounter behind. My mind kept replaying the man's bizarre behavior, the way he spoke about being watched, and how he disappeared into the woods without so much as a flashlight or supplies. The hike back to the trailhead felt endless, every shadow in the trees putting me on edge. When I finally reached the parking lot, there were only two cars, mine and an old beat-up sedan parked near the edge of the lot. I stopped, my stomach sinking. The sedan looked out of place, like it had been there for a long time. The windows were grimy, and the tires were caked in dirt. I couldn't help myself. I walked closer. Peering inside, I saw the interior was a mess. Fast food wrappers, an old backpack tossed on the back seat, and a trail map crumpled on the dashboard. I hesitated, unsure of what to do. The man's behavior had been unsettling, but I couldn't shake the feeling that something was wrong. I decided to stop at the ranger station on my way out to report what had happened. When I got to the station, I told the ranger about the man, the campfire, and the strange encounter. I also mentioned the old sedan in the parking lot. The ranger's face grew serious. Can you describe the man? He asked. I told him everything I could remember. His dark jacket, baseball cap, tall frame, and the odd way he spoke. The ranger exchanged a glance with his colleague, then asked me to wait while he checked something. He disappeared into a back room, returning a few minutes later with a printed piece of paper. "This might sound strange," he said, "but did he look like this?" He handed me a missing person flyer. My heart dropped. It was the man from the campfire. His name was Mark Jensen, and according to the flyer, he'd been missing for almost 2 years. He'd last been seen heading out on a solo hike in the same area I'd been camping. "His car is still in the parking lot," I said, my voice barely above a whisper. The ranger nodded grimly. "We've been keeping an eye on it. Search teams went out when he first disappeared, but they never found him. Most people assume he got lost in the wilderness, but there were rumors. Strange ones." "What kind of rumors?" I asked, though part of me didn't want to know. The ranger hesitated, then said, "Other hikers have reported seeing someone matching his description, acting oddly, but when we go to check, there's no trace of him." A chill ran down my spine. I left the station as quickly as I could, the ranger's words echoing in my head. I haven't been back to that trail since, but I still go hiking. And every time I'm out in the wilderness, I can't help but think about that man and wonder if he's still out there, wandering the forest, looking for something, or someone. It's a question that lingers in the back of my mind, one I'll likely never have an answer to. My name's Rachel, and this happened about 3 years ago. I've been hiking solo for years. There's something so freeing about being alone in nature, away from the noise of the city and the constant buzz of life. But after this experience, I've learned that solitude can come with risks I'd never truly considered. It was late April, and I'd planned a solo hike in the Cascade Mountains. The trail wasn't particularly remote, but it wasn't crowded either. A perfect balance. It was a sunny morning when I set out, the kind of day that makes you feel like everything is right with the world. The first few hours were uneventful. The trail was challenging but manageable, and I was enjoying the rhythm of my steps, the sound of birds in the trees, and the occasional rustling of leaves in the breeze. I stopped for lunch at a clearing with a view of a valley below, then continued on, planning to finish the loop by late afternoon. That's when I made my mistake. About 4 miles from the trailhead, I stepped on a loose rock. My ankle twisted, and I went down hard. Pain shot up my leg, sharp and immediate. I sat there for a moment, breathing through the shock, hoping it wasn't as bad as it felt. But when I tried to stand, my ankle gave out, sending me right back to the ground. "Great," I muttered to myself, wincing. I knew I wasn't walking out of there on my own. I pulled out my phone, but there was no signal. Of course. I wasn't surprised, but it still made my stomach sink. I was stranded. Alone, and my only option was to wait and hope someone came along. I had enough water and a first aid kit, so I tried to stay calm. I elevated my ankle, wrapped it as best I could, and leaned against a tree, listening for any sound of approaching hikers. Hours passed, but the trail remained quiet. It was late afternoon when I heard footsteps. "Hello?" I called, relief flooding my voice. A man appeared around the bend in the trail. He looked to be in his 40s, wearing a weathered jacket and hiking boots. His pack was small, almost too small for someone out here for more than a day. "You okay?" he asked, his voice calm and friendly. "I twisted my ankle," I said, gesturing to my leg. "I can't walk on it." He crouched beside me, inspecting the makeshift wrap I'd done. "Looks like a bad sprain," he said. "Good thing I came along. I can help you out." I felt an overwhelming wave of gratitude. "Thank you," I said. I was starting to think no one else was on this trail. He smiled, but it didn't quite reach his eyes. "It's not a busy one," he said, "but I know it well." Something about the way he said that made me pause, but I pushed the thought aside. He was helping me, and that's all that mattered. He pulled a small roll of athletic tape from his pack and rewrapped my ankle, much more securely this time. "You think you can lean on me?" he asked. I nodded, grateful for the support. We started down the trail, moving slowly. At first, I didn't notice anything odd. He was polite, asking me about my hike, where I was from, and if I often hiked alone. But as we continued, I realized something was off. The terrain was unfamiliar. I'd studied the map before setting out, and this wasn't part of the trail I remembered. "Are we still on the main trail?" I asked. He hesitated for a moment before answering. "It's a shortcut," he said. "Trust me, it'll get us back faster." The knot in my stomach tightened. The path was narrow, overgrown, and steep in places. Nothing like the well-maintained trail I'd been on earlier. "Are you sure?" I pressed. "Positive," he said, his tone firm. We kept going, but my unease was growing with every step. The forest felt darker here, the trees denser. I started to lag behind, using my injured ankle as an excuse to slow down. The man stayed patient, but never let me fall too far behind. "You okay back there?" he asked, glancing over his shoulder. "Yeah," I said, forcing a smile. "Just need a quick break." He nodded and stopped, but the way he watched me made my skin crawl. I reached for my phone, pretending to check it even though I knew I still didn't have service. "We should keep moving," he said after a minute, his voice sharper now. "It's going to get dark soon." That was when I realized I needed to get out of this situation. I didn't know where he was taking me, but it wasn't back to the trailhead. "Actually, I think I should just stay here and wait for someone else to come by," I said, trying to sound confident. His expression darkened. "You can't stay out here," he said. "It's not safe." The way he said it sent chills down my spine. I took a small step back. "I'll be fine," I said, trying to keep my voice steady. "I have supplies." "You think someone's going to find you out here?" he asked, his tone almost mocking. "We're miles from the main trail." Before I could respond, I heard it. Voices in the distance. "Hey, anyone out there?" Relief flooded through me. I opened my mouth to call back, but the man grabbed my arm, his grip like a vice. "Don't," he hissed. I yanked my arm away, stumbling backward. "Help," I shouted, my voice cracking. The voices grew louder, and a moment later, two hikers appeared through the trees. A man and a woman, both carrying large packs. They stopped when they saw us, their faces a mix of confusion and concern. "What's going on?" the woman asked. The man next to me stepped back, his face carefully neutral. "She twisted her ankle," he said, his tone suddenly calm again. "I was helping her out." The hikers looked at me, waiting for confirmation. I nodded quickly. "I think I'll go with them now," I said, my voice shaky. The man hesitated for a moment, then gave a tight smile. "Suit yourself," he said, turning and walking off without another word. The hikers helped me back to the main trail, where they called for assistance. When I finally got to safety, I reported the man to the park rangers. They said they'd look into it, but admitted they didn't have much to go on. To this day, I don't know what his intentions were, but I can't stop thinking about where he was taking me or what might have happened if those other hikers hadn't shown up. Now, I always hike with a buddy, because sometimes the scariest thing in the wilderness isn't the terrain, it's the people you meet along the way. My name is Brian, and this happened just last summer. It was early June, and I'd taken a few days off work to explore a remote trail in the Rockies. I'd picked this area specifically because it was less trafficked. No crowded campgrounds or noisy groups, just miles of untouched wilderness. The first day of hiking was perfect. The trail was challenging but manageable, and the weather was ideal. Clear skies and a light breeze. I passed a few hikers on the way, exchanged the usual nods and polite greetings, but by late afternoon, I hadn't seen anyone in hours. I found a good spot to set up camp near a small stream. After pitching my tent, I cooked a quick meal on my portable stove and settled in for the evening, listening to the sounds of the forest. It was peaceful, exactly what I'd hoped for. The next day, I packed up early and continued deeper into the trail. By mid-afternoon, I started noticing subtle signs of human presence, boot prints in the dirt, a stray candy wrapper. It wasn't unusual, but it told me I wasn't as alone as I thought. About an hour later, I stumbled upon the campsite. It was tucked just off the trail, partially hidden by a cluster of trees. There were two tents, both still set up, and a small fire ring surrounded by rocks. A few items were scattered around, camp chairs, a cooler, even a backpack propped against one of the tents. At first, I assumed whoever was camping there had just gone for a hike. But as I got closer, I noticed something strange. Everything was covered in a thin layer of dirt and leaves, as if it had been sitting there for days. I walked closer, my curiosity outweighing my unease. The tents were zipped shut, and the fire ring was cold, the ashes damp from an earlier rain. The backpack was open, and inside, I saw a couple of water bottles, a map, and some snacks. It didn't look like anything had been packed up or taken, just abandoned. I stood there for a while, trying to make sense of it. Maybe they'd left in a hurry, an emergency back home or something. But why leave everything behind? The longer I stood there, the more unsettled I felt. The campsite had an eerie stillness to it, like the forest was holding its breath. I decided not to linger. I took a quick photo of the site, just in case, and continued on the trail. But the image of that abandoned campsite stayed with me, gnawing at the back of my mind. By the time I found a spot to set up camp for the night, the sun was beginning to set. I pitched my tent in a clearing near a ridge, where I had a clear view of the valley below. It was beautiful, but I couldn't shake the uneasy feeling from earlier. After eating dinner, I sat outside my tent, staring at the fading light. The forest around me felt different, too quiet. Normally I'd hear the rustling of leaves, the occasional call of a bird or distant howl of a coyote. But that night, it was silent. I tried to convince myself it was just my imagination, but then I heard it. A faint rustling, coming from the direction of the trail. I froze, straining to listen. It could have been an animal, a deer maybe, but the sound was deliberate, like footsteps on dry leaves. The rustling stopped, and the silence returned, heavier than before. My heart was racing, but I told myself it was nothing. Animals make noise. That's just part of the wilderness. I climbed into my tent, zipped it up, and tried to calm my nerves. Hours later, I woke up to the sound of footsteps. They were slow and heavy, crunching through the underbrush just outside my tent. My breath caught in my throat. I didn't move, didn't make a sound, just lay there, listening. The footsteps circled my tent, stopping for long moments before continuing. My heart was pounding so hard I thought it might burst. I reached for my flashlight and flicked it on, shining it toward the tent wall. Nothing. The footsteps resumed, moving away this time, fading into the distance until the forest was silent again. I didn't sleep the rest of the night. When dawn finally came, I packed up my camp as quickly as I could and started back toward the trailhead. Every sound, every shadow set me on edge. I kept looking over my shoulder, half expecting to see someone, or something, following me. When I finally reached my car, I felt an overwhelming sense of relief. But as I loaded my gear, I noticed something that made my blood run cold. On the driver's side window, smeared into the dirt, was a single handprint. It was too large to be mine, and I hadn't seen anyone else on the trail since the day before. When I got home, I called the park rangers to report the abandoned campsite. They took my information and said they'd look into it. A few days later, I got a call back. The ranger thanked me for the report and said they'd found the campsite, but what they discovered made my stomach turn. The site belonged to two hikers reported missing a month ago, he said. We haven't found them yet, but there were signs someone else had been there recently. I asked what he meant, but he wouldn't give me details. To this day, I don't know who or what was out there that night. My name's Sarah, and this happened last fall. My best friend Lily and I had decided to go on a weekend hiking trip in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. We'd both been feeling the weight of our busy lives, and the idea of getting away, even for a couple of days, sounded perfect. We started early on Saturday morning, driving to a remote trailhead that promised gorgeous views and minimal foot traffic. It was late October, and the foliage was at its peak. Vivid reds, yellows, and oranges blanketed the landscape. The air was crisp, and the trail was quiet, just the sound of our boots crunching on the leaves. The first day was everything we'd hoped for. We hiked about 8 miles, chatting and laughing, stopping to take pictures of the views. By late afternoon, we'd found a spot to set up camp near a stream. After dinner, we sat around our little fire, enjoying the serenity of the forest. It felt safe, peaceful, like we were the only ones out there. I wish I could say that feeling lasted. The next morning, we decided to take a less marked trail that was supposed to loop back to the main path. It wasn't on any of the official maps, but we'd read about it on a hiking forum. "Adventure, right?" Lily had said, grinning as we started down the narrow path. The trail was harder than we expected, steeper, rockier, and more overgrown. After a couple of hours, we realized we hadn't seen any trail markers for a while. Lily insisted we keep going, convinced it would eventually loop back, but something about it felt off. The trees grew denser, and the sunlight barely filtered through the canopy. It felt isolated. Around mid-afternoon, Lily stopped to tie her boot. I walked ahead, only a few steps, but when I turned around to say something, she was gone. "Lily?" I called, my voice echoing in the stillness. Nothing. I retraced my steps, calling her name louder. My heart pounded in my chest as I searched the area. The trail wasn't wide, and there was no way she could have gone far without me seeing her, but she was nowhere to be found. At first, I thought maybe she was messing with me. Lily had a playful streak, and it wouldn't have been the first time she tried to scare me. But as the minutes dragged on and my calls went unanswered, panic started to set in. I searched for hours, veering off the trail, shouting until my throat was raw. The forest seemed endless, every tree looking the same, every rustle of leaves making me jump. The sun was beginning to set, and the shadows grew longer, casting an eerie glow over the woods. Just as I was about to turn back and head for help, I heard it, a faint, muffled yell. "Lily!" I screamed, running toward the sound. My heart was racing as I pushed through the underbrush, the branches clawing at my arms and face. The yelling grew louder, more desperate, leading me to a small clearing. That's when I saw it, an old shack, barely standing, its wooden boards warped and rotting. It looked like it hadn't been used in decades, but the door was slightly ajar. My stomach twisted in fear, but I forced myself to move closer. "Lily," I whispered, stepping onto the creaking porch. Inside, the air was damp and musty. The faint light streaming through the cracks in the walls barely illuminated the room, but it was enough to see her. Lily was tied to a chair in the corner, her face pale, her wrists and ankles bound with coarse rope. "Oh my God," I gasped, rushing to her.
"Are you okay?"
"Sarah," she croaked, her voice hoarse. "We have to get out of here. He's coming back." My blood ran cold. "Who?" I asked, frantically working to untie the knots. "I don't know," she said, tears streaming down her face. "I was walking, and someone grabbed me from behind. He said he'd come back for you." Her words hit me like a punch to the gut. Someone had been following us, watching us, waiting for the perfect moment to separate us. The knots were tight, and my hands were trembling, but I finally managed to free her wrists and ankles. "Can you walk?" I asked. She nodded, wincing as she stood. "I think so. Let's go," I said, helping her to the door. The forest outside was eerily quiet, the kind of silence that feels unnatural. We moved as quickly as we could, staying off the trail, ducking behind trees whenever we thought we heard something. Every step felt like a race against time, like whoever had taken Lily could appear at any moment. At one point, Lily grabbed my arm, her eyes wide with terror. "Over there," she whispered, pointing to a dark shape moving through the trees. It was a man, tall, wearing dark clothes, his movements deliberate. We crouched low, barely breathing, as he walked past, thankfully not noticing us. Once he was out of sight, we bolted, adrenaline pushing us forward despite Lily's injuries. After what felt like hours, we finally made it back to the main trail. From there, it was another mile to the parking lot. When we saw the cars, I almost cried with relief. We didn't stop. We got into my car, locked the doors, and drove straight to the nearest ranger station to report what had happened. The police immediately launched an investigation after we gave them our statement. A team was sent to search the area, and they confirmed they found the shack exactly where we described it. Inside, they discovered more rope, some tattered clothing, and signs that someone had been using it recently. They told us they were now actively searching for the man, using the evidence from the shack to try to track him down. Knowing he was still out there sent a chill through me, but at least the authorities were taking it seriously and doing everything they could to stop him before he hurt someone else. I haven't been hiking since. The forest used to feel like a place of peace, but now it just feels like a place where you can disappear without a trace. Because sometimes, the scariest thing about being in the wilderness isn't what you find. It's who's out there waiting for you.